This episode of Dinner and a Podcast, since we haven't sold any sponsors yet, is brought to you by things I'm really into, like Propaganda Donuts, Founders KBS, Vault of Midnight Comics, and Maru Sushi. Any of you that actually want to sponsor the show, you are more than welcome to. But this is episode 2 of Dinner and a Podcast. Adrian Butler joins us, along with my friend Mike Allen and Julian Garcia. And then, of course, my wife, who was hanging around and making sure that this thing goes off without a hitch. Because without her, it doesn't happen. So enjoy episode 2 of Dinner and a Podcast.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
There are no happy endings to a life of crime, O'Brien.
Dinner and a Podcast. Hosted by EOB at 1045SNX.com.
Down a flight of stairs next to a subway entrance.
You're taking your jacket off, you're being casual.
I am. That's how I roll.
This isn't a restaurant, and this is no ordinary meal.
You know, when I'm prepping people for dinner, I just hate not to be with them practically all the time.
I gotta ask you, did you do voice training and stuff?
No.
You didn't? Mm-hmm. This is just, you just talk all the time? Like, you don't, does your voice ever, like, get tired?
Sometimes it does, mostly. Like, December is a brutal month, just mm-hmm. for whatever reason. I just think,
like,
when the weather gets super dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for the most part, I can go for a long time.
Okay.
When I teach on Wednesdays,
yeah.
when I start at 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning, and then I'm still going until 10 at night,
yeah.
that day is brutal.
Okay.
But for the most part, I can kind of keep it all in check.
Yeah, I was listening.
Did you?
I was listening. No, I mean, I took some acting classes in middle school. That's about it. But I did. My church was, like, really, I think I got a lot of stuff. I learned a lot from church, honestly.
Where'd you go to church?
Messiah Baptist, which is, like...
Now, did you perform at that point?
Oh, yeah, like, my senior... Oh, yeah, I started out doing Christian rap music when I was, like, 18 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, but I was rapping, like, around 16, 17, but just, like, at the high school, just, like, doing, like writing... lyrics and stuff like that, but then I tried to be like a really good Christian from like the ages of like 18 to like 22 or 23.
And how did that work out for you?
It was very frustrating. it was really frustrating, and but yeah. So anyway, like that's where there were like plays and there were like things in which like I would have to talk in front of like the church, and then I just kept doing it and then got better, I guess. I sang in choir, but that didn't, I can't sing, so I was just doing that because there were like hot girls in the choir.
Right, right.
And my parents were like super strict and they were like, oh, are those girls?
Those are, in fact, thin mints. Yeah, yeah.
This is great. Is it going to be like this every time I come over here?
I hope so.
Is there always
going
to be beer?
Yeah. Oh, there will always be beer. I don't. Well, I mean, Girl Scout cookies are kind of seasonal, so it'd be some other cookie. But yes, we'll have something for sure. So the show is called Dinner and a Podcast. Joining me right now, Adrian Butler. If you don't know him, but we've been just sort of talking on and off. And your expertise, obviously, as you were just alluding to, is in music. And you started at a church.
Yep.
You did some acting. You started rapping at, you know, 16, 17.
Yeah, yeah.
Went into the Christian universe, you know, from
that is a universe,
18
man.
To 22. Well, I mean, it
yeah,
is,
yeah.
You know, because you kind of have to. There are some, and I think this is fair to say, there are some decent hip-hop outfits out of the Christian universe.
Yes.
Not very many, though.
No, not very many. And then, so you fight that the whole time, you know? Like, you tell people you're a Christian rap artist, and they're like, oh, you're whack.
Yeah, yeah, like, terrible, right. Which, isn't it? I mean, which is fascinating in a country like this, and I don't know how, again, second show, I don't know how far we really want to go with all this stuff, but
yeah,
you and I have been friends for...
A while.
Shit, a decade, right? At least.
Okay, sure.
Probably. Decade. It has to be at this point.
Let's, yeah, it's 2014. Nah, I say like six. Let's say 6 years.
Okay.
I think it's
we'll take
6 years.
But you and I have never really talked about this, although we have talked about this. And isn't it interesting in a country like we live in that embraces Christianity in the way in which they embrace Christianity, but still there's a kind of... wall of racism, like, well,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's Christianity, but I mean, how could there be really hip hop Christianity?
No. Right? That's a whole, especially around here, like.
Oh, I'm sure there's
where we are.
It's
yeah,
just the same.
But since I'm here, I can speak to this. Is that yeah? You definitely you're not going to hear any Christian hip hop on any of the Christian stations,
right?
Barely. Now, when you did, it was that one dude, KJ52, I think.
Right.
And he had that song about Eminem.
Right.
And he wrote a letter to Eminem. So then, like, the next single he did, he, like, wrote another letter to Eminem. And then he was like, this is how I can get on the radio. Well,
and,
you know what I'm saying?
And that's, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to you know, add you into the mix, because you and I have these awesome conversations about music, but nobody else ever gets to hear them.
That's true.
You know, because on SNX, I have 3 or 4 minutes, right?
Right.
So we talk about what you have coming up. We play you have coming up, and then we bounce. But last week, your album release was on Saturday. It was sold out at Billy's. Everybody was saying how great this performance is. People are talking about this EP, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But you and I had started, and but kind of before we get here, I want to talk a little bit more about you, because I find you a fascinating cat. And so, like, as you're going through this process, though, and we had talked last week, you've made the leap. You have a child on the way, April 30th, but you've made this traumatically scary-ass leap where you, this is what you're doing. You're making music. You're a guy making music in America.
And I'm not moving. I'm not leaving, and I'm not about to move to New York or L.A. or some large metropolis.
You've clearly,
you know what I'm saying? So,
bumped your head very hard that you want to make it work here in Grand Rapids, but it's, so far it's working.
Right now.
But when did you get to the point that you were confident enough that this was even a kernel? Because it wasn't like
I've been confident enough that like that my music is good enough and that I have the potential to be good enough to make money at this and to do it professionally. However,
and you've had that forever, or
I had that confidence probably since like 2010. You know what I'm saying?
So
around that time, 2009 maybe. You know what I mean? Like,
what was the
turning point was that I always have had to have a job. I've always had to work retail, and the turning point for me was just having a retail job that I actually finally, you know, being a retail manager. You know how those hours are? They're crazy.
Especially when you get around the holidays and all.
Yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like I just got to a point where like I had a retail job that I just hated. You know, like financially, I was making, you know, in the retail world, I was doing pretty well.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? But I just didn't have time. And I got sick of my mind being filled with like all these ideas, all these lyric ideas, song ideas, T-shirt ideas, name it, any creative idea, any source of inspiration that I would have at the beginning of the day would like be gone by the end of the day.
Right.
And I can remember the night that it happened. There's Grizzly Bears, 2 weeks, that song. I want to do a video to it. I want to steal the beat and make a video, right? And I've been wanting to do this since I've heard the song. And I have like half of the song written. And I finally connected with someone to do video for it. And I'm really excited. This is like a really great person to work with. Like,
right.
I think I'd be able to work with them. So we get together and we finally meet. It's like 11 o'clock,
excuse me,
on a Wednesday night. And I get there after work and my mind is just gone. Like, I just have no, you know, because I had actually did the open to close thing. And I had done the open to close thing before. In my mind, I'm thinking like, well, I've been wanting to do this for so long.
Right.
I have all these ideas. I'll be fine. But I get, we sit down and we start talking about it. And my mind just went blank. And I just couldn't express the ideas that I thought I had. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, I can't do it anymore. I can't not give my time to something I have so much passion about.
So what's it like? What'd you do today?
Today. Let's do this. A day in my life. Today I took my daughter to school. We got to the school at 7:45 and then I went to work out and, I worked out until about 9 o'clock and then I met my brother for breakfast at 9:30. This is a good day so
this
far,
seems
right?
Seems like a charmed life, actually. Yeah. Right. Like, I want to quit my job right now, actually.
So then, after I had breakfast with my brother at Real Food Cafe, which is awesome.
Alger Heights?
Alger Heights, because I live over there.
Yep.
And so after that, it was back home. And so from about 10:15 until 2 o'clock, emails, emails, emails.
I spent about an hour on music, and then more emails.
So even so, that's so, so even when you've kind of made that leap that every you're surrounded by, and I think in some ways we all are. We surround ourselves with people that, in some way, shape, or form, are kind of yes men, right? Mm-hmm. Every idea is a brilliant idea, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These are the guys that get you in trouble when you go to Vegas, like these. So you obviously have people in your life who thought this was an awesome idea, right? This is
No. Nobody knew I was going to quit my job. My wife was cool with it because.
Well, I would imagine she'd have.
Financially. Yeah, because we got a baby on the way. Right. Financially, we were okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't, we weren't going to take a big hit right away. But yeah, man, it's hard. Today was an easier day, but it wasn't easy because.
No, so.
Those emails.
Yeah,
so what that, up, sir? Those emails suck.
That's kind of what I was going to say.
It sucks up all your time.
Even when you've taken this jump that everybody from the outside would go, oh, man, you're a rock star. You know,
yeah.
You're doing hip-hop music. You sit in the studio all day long. And, you know, you get high and you're drunk and you write whatever. You know, but here, you know, sit down, Julian. You can go sit over here. You're fine. You know, even in all that, there's still the tentacles of corporate culture that you've got to answer emails for 6 hours a day.
Well, yeah, because you know what though, as a musician, or at least in what I'm doing, I'm dealing with a lot of people that aren't musicians. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And their lives
eight
are
five,
very
man.
Different.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
So while I want to be working on music, you know, I would have loved to have been working on music from like 10:30 to 2:30 today, but
do you take a day out of the week and just do that? Like,
yeah. So like Wednesday will be like that. Like Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, Friday morning, usually from about, I don't know, man, like 7:30, 8 o'clock until usually about 11 or 12, I can get a lot of stuff done. I usually have a chunk of time because nobody is really bothering me at that time. I can safely like stay away from the computer for a few hours
right.
on those days. If I take care of some of the correspondence things like Monday and Tuesday.
Right.
So that's the thing. But it's the other hard thing is just there's no time to like stop. You know what I mean? Like after, like when I leave here, when I go back home, I'm going to be working on music again tonight. You know what I'm saying? Like I can't,
are you more creative at night then? Or
it just depends. It really, it depends.
It just,
there's that, but then I kind of have to make myself do it too. You know what I mean? Like I can't just wait for like inspiration. I have to, you know, everything I've read about a lot of successful writers and successful artists is, indicates that they kind of have some discipline involved in what they do too.
I think
you know
certainly
what I mean? So
do you know who Stephen Pressfield is?
No, I don't.
Okay, so he wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Okay.
The golf book that became a golf movie. And he wrote this book, The War on Art.
I have that book.
Okay, so
he's the artist. Yeah, so I should actually know who this is.
Yes. So I mean that whole book is about being disciplined and knowing that you need to kind of get up. You know, he's got early in the book has a whole process of I get up in the morning, I drink coffee from X to Y, I read the paper from Z to A, and
then
I start writing from. My favorite part in the book is when he talks about writing because he's obviously a writer and I'm fascinated with writing, the language and all of that stuff. But he literally will say that I write from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and then I stop and I never read it.
Huh.
Like, I don't care if it sucks. I'll go back to it at some point, but this is my job. So Monday through Friday, I write from 10 to 3
and then I
hang it up.
Okay.
And then at some point I go back and I go, is this any good? I don't know. Is this an idea? Sure, let's go do this stuff. But it's like you said, it's that discipline. So even if he has a terrible day, he's going to write for 5 hours and maybe it'll all be worthless, but that's his new job.
And that's
the fascinating part about artists who decide to not make it a hobby and make it their job, because it's not too different than working in retail in some respects.
No, it's not. It's not. You go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it. You don't have enough time to finish everything that you started
to
do. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot of the same stresses, but the difference is that you, the love or the passion that you have for it makes it something that you're more willing to sacrifice, you know, time and energy for. At least that's what I found for myself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, if I'm up until like 3 a.m. and then I get up at like 6 the next morning because it's like music related.
Right.
Like I'm not happy, obviously, with three hours of sleep. Right. But I don't really care because I'm getting closer to like the result that I want.
And what is that? What's the goal?
I guess it depends on it's there's like a whole bunch of like small goals, you know what I'm saying? Like, to the big
but are
one,
like
right?
are you, you know somebody so like, you know I'm, we've never talked about this. Are you somebody who wants to get signed, or is that shipped? And I don't mean this.
Yeah.
I don't mean this like a slight. I mean this technologically speaking. For most people, that ship should have sailed. Like, who cares? I don't need to be on a label, right? I mean,
right.
There's not a lot going on in the label universe, save for scale, that most artists can't do on their own.
Yeah. Until they're really big, though. You know what I'm saying? I think I do want to be on a label. I do want that, because then I can have Pharrell produce a song for me. You know what I mean? I can have the bankroll to get that.
I mean,
because if you can't get that,
but if you could get the bankroll, why? I mean, like,
that's the thing. If I could,
what if you could Kickstarter it?
If I could Kickstarter it, then I'd be fine.
I mean, for the love of God, Oculus Kickstarted a $2 billion headset where you,
that's true.
You know, and nobody even saw it. They got all their money to launch it. Nobody got it, and they sold it to Facebook.
Well, no, this is good. I have not started a Kickstarter, so that would be
And there are a ton of musicians on there, and you are one that I know here locally, and obviously some regional success. There's a lot of people that like your stuff.
When you
post those T-shirts, everybody wants to know where do I get a T-shirt, and that would be obviously a great hook to get them to donate to the cause. And I don't know what a Pharrell beat is. Is it $250,000? Is it $500,000? I have no idea.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It can't be more ridiculous than that, right? I mean,
No. That's about enough.
Like $500,000 for 3 minutes seems pretty ridiculous.
The sad thing is that dude probably has so many beats that are just like sitting around that are just, because even producers that I know that are from around here that are good have beats that they're just like are just hanging around in their computer not being used.
But I would imagine much like what you're going through, they get up every day and they just make stuff, and obviously everything's not going to be gold.
Well, yeah, that's true. I just actually went through I have this little blue box. It's actually not a little box. It's like a size 13 shoe box. It's just full of like sheets of paper with lyrics on them, and envelopes with lyrics on them, and paper bags from the grocery store with lyrics on the back of them and stuff like that.
You know? So it literally strikes you everywhere.
It does. Yeah. In the car, at the store, in the bathroom.
So
you have that. So you have all these little sheets of paper. And then you also have like your notebook that you know when you sat down to do some focused writing that you have that too.
And now
I got to go through my phone and go through my notes and stuff too because I write on there too. I email myself stuff sometimes too. So
how do you keep it all
everywhere
straight though? If you've got, I mean, how
well,
do you,
well,
like, how does that, like, how do you make a song if you've got stuff on a piece of paper in a box?
And I got it everywhere. So what I do is when I get some music there's a couple ways. Like, I'll have an idea for a song, maybe. I have an idea for a song, and then I find a beat to kind of feel the way that my lyrics are feeling for that song. Or I have a beat, and it makes me feel a certain way. It makes me think about something. So those are two basic, very basic ways. So once I have the idea behind the song and the music, then I'll write. I'll write to it. You know what I mean? I'll write to it a few times. Then I'll go into those boxes and those notebooks and
nuggets.
Just start looking through that stuff while I'm listening to this beat to see if there's anything that corresponds with like what's going on in the song. That's a basic way that I've written songs.
So what do you, you know, you've been writing for, you know, without giving too much away on either one of our ages, you've been writing for a long time.
Yeah.
Music wise, I mean, how do you think music stands up right now in 2014?
Popular music that's on the radio.
You and I had this conversation about like, you know, the Intersection does these really successful 80s nights, and you do these wildly successful 90s nights. And we were talking about, you know, what is it about them? You don't, nobody's doing let's do a 2000 night, you know,
let's
all get together and do Britney Spears work night. Like that's not a thing. what is it about those two decades for people that are still consuming music in a concert venue or a club sense that they want to either rush to remember those times
or
they want to be a part of, you know, in some sense, when you go to like 80s Night at the Intersection, there's a fair amount of people that would have zero idea
Cameo
or what Word Up actually was, you know. But they'll go there and have a good time because the music still does something to them.
Ow.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
I think that it means that the music now is just it's boring, and it's too soft on content. You know what I mean? Like, there's no substantial. There's not even like anything. A lot of songs are just not like they're not saying anything. You know what I mean? Like they're not saying anything, and but there's not even like, I feel like there's, we could say like a lack of real like soul. Or something like that. Not to sound corny and like too artistic or whatever, but like I do feel like that's the case. I feel like
if you look back, so even let's take the most popular band on planet Earth being the Beatles, right?
They had
their fair amount of vapid lyrical
songs.
Like, there's a fair amount of songs that have zero you know, they're not changing the world with what they did. They obviously evolved as a band.
And,
you know, much like if you want to use U2 evolved as a band and then kind of got to the point where they were a caricature of themselves. So now they're not nearly as weighted as individuals as they used to be. There was that moment where if Bono said, "We could stop hunger," we would go, "We could totally stop hunger." Bono said we could totally do it. Yeah. Now you're like, we get it. We can stop hunger. We can stop cancer. AIDS is a joke. Got it, Bono. We can stop everything with just our minds and really cool glasses.
Those red glasses, man.
Right.
He was killing it with those red glasses.
But
I'm not saying that. I agree with you. Like, I do think. But the Beatles, though, they definitely had their heavier material, too. And, like, their more artistic.
But do you think
material too?
I guess my question though is: do you think we'll get to a point where, let's just use Miley Cyrus as an example? You know, obviously one of the most polarizing figures in music, and there is no doubt that she has an acumen for something. And that's not a disrespect. She knows how to get people to talk about her. She knows how to get people to buy her product.
Yeah.
And she's evolved from a child star into this person who has finger on the zeitgeist of the day, you know, the spirit of the day. She's right in there. But will anybody be talking about her in 50 years? Will she get a chance to do a White Album or a Sgt. Pepper's? And I know those are really cliche examples, but
I don't think she'll get that chance.
Will she get to do...
Because Britney's not getting that chance. And Britney is kind of like went through a... Well, I wouldn't say similar, but like her career has gone through those same phases of like teenage pop sort of girl, and now as she's gotten older, she can't get out of that. She can't get out of it.
Do you think she can't get out of it though because she has giant public meltdowns, like shaves her head, you know, and beats up an SUV with an umbrella? Like, because, you know, when you look at Miley Cyrus and it's easy to make fun of her, I think that's an easy target and kind of a cheap target, because I really feel in the same way as what Marilyn Manson did in the late 90s and 2000s, he was in on the joke. He knew exactly what he was doing, you know, when he was making that music, what he was going to do to parents and exactly what he was going to do to sell T-shirts. And, you know, he was not so much an artist as he was, you know, Barnum and Bailey. I mean, he understood the circus and knew how to sell elephants standing on their hind legs. And I think to some extent, I really, from a marketing perspective, you can't help but admire that Miley's doing the same thing. She's totally in on the joke.
Oh, yeah. That's like, 2 Chainz as well. I feel like, you know, he's like the same way. So
2 Chainz, Lil Jon before him.
Yeah.
You know?
But I don't know that.
Ying Yang Twins, they weren't in on the joke. That's why they're.
No. Wherever they were serious. Wherever, you know, they were serious.
They thought it was Krunk. They thought Krunk was a real thing. And then.
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know what to say about this. I don't think that a lot of these artists are going to stand the test of time, or at least their music won't. Like, the idea of them, like, we'll know who they are.
Because you look at this, like, look at Gangnam Style, right?
Yeah.
Over a billion. I don't even know what the, I mean, I could look it up, but I don't even know what the actual count is. But it's well over a billion streams on YouTube.
Yeah.
Which I think if you told anybody in 1980 or 1990, 1 billion people are going to consume your product, they would have been rich for life. And this is a gentleman you will never hear from again.
No. I don't never hear that from was, again. Even DJing stuff. Like, I played his songs a little bit, and then it was done. And I think that's how everything is. It's like it's hot, and it's hot, and then gone.
And then it goes to what does the fox say?
Yeah.
It goes to the Chainsmokers and Selfie right now. And obviously, the Chainsmokers, to some extent, I feel, are in on the joke and get it.
Yeah.
But if you're not, if you don't have a backup plan and you're a new artist, and you and I kind of touched on this last week when we were talking about doing this, when you're listening to all the stuff that's going on in the EDM world and you, you know, and you're just going to sample some songs and put them together and think that you're either Will.i.am or Tiesto or Calvin Harris or Avicii. And I mean, that's the top of the food chain as far as that goes. There's a million people below that. Skrillex obviously would land in that category. Deadmau5 would land in that category. But there's a million people, DJ below that, that can't pay their bills.
Oh, for sure, for sure. It's, I keep thinking about disco music, man. Like, it just, that's just what it reminds me of. I feel like that's what this era is going to look like.
And that, I mean,
it's going to look, crazy. Like, people are going to be like, you, for how many years did you listen to the same beat over and over with just a different vocalist on it? Like, essentially the same song format, and you didn't get bored of this?
Right.
Right. Like, how long has it been?
It's all the same key. It's all the same timing. And
I remember when...
And I think disco is a great example. I mean, when you look back at... Who do we talk about from the disco era? The Weathermen and Donna Summer. Other than that, do we talk about?
Yeah, I don't even know, man.
And obviously, like, it's Raining Men is a joke. They, you know, they don't talk about that for real.
Yeah,
The Village People...
YMCA. That's
a total joke.
Yeah, nobody...
Anything that you play at a wedding that follows the chicken dance is not a real song.
That's...
You know?
You can... I never play the chicken dance on a DJ wedding.
That's why you're here. Because if you did play the chicken dance, there would be nothing for you and I to talk about.
Oh, man, that's funny. I'm disappointed with the music right now. And to go back to it, I do think that ultimately when people get out of the club, you know what I mean? And when they're not in the club, And they're thinking about music. I don't think that they're thinking about. I don't think they want to hear what they're being fed right now.
So what do you, I mean? What do you think you do in that? Like, so yeah, like you said, you're in the club and you're listening to Selfie and you're having a good time. And I think my Beatles example is why I used it, because there's 1,000 from that period of time, from Elvis before that, from Dizzy Gillespie before that. There's 1,000 consumable, disposable pieces of music throughout history that you listen to at one point and then you just kind of, that's the end of it. But right now there doesn't seem to be a lot of, even in hip hop. I mean, if you want to talk about conscious rapping, that doesn't exist anymore, you know? And from a pop perspective, nobody is using that platform to say anything of substance after they do a song called Selfie. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
Those Chainsmokers aren't going to come back and go, hey, are you guys aware of Ukraine?
Right.
Do you know that Russia owns them? Like, that's not going to be what they're going to do.
Dude, that's crazy.
Good evening, Mike Allen.
We got another.
Alice?
Good.
Hey. So, yeah, I don't think... I just don't think that those artists are able to they're obviously not going to be on the radio anymore. They have to find other ways to do it. There's still artists that are saying substantial
like
things.
Like who do you listen to right now that you think has some substance?
Well, right now, myself.
a less narcissistic answer, actually.
What's wrong with that? My daughter loves my songs, so she was. She wants to.
Because it's probably a bad barometer, dude.
For what it's worth, my five-year-old son, I'm the greatest driver, and
she wanted to listen. She wants to listen to these songs when we get in the car, and I don't say no, and then I start listening to them too, and then I'm like, oh yeah, that song's not as good as the last one. You know, I've actually identified like the three best songs on my CD, and it's been a good process to like criticize myself. But back to your original question, I would say artists that I'm listening to that I feel like actually I like Kendrick Lamar. I feel like he has a lot to say. I feel like he has a lot to say, and I feel like that's a new artist that I find myself like kind of like going back to mm-hmm. to listen to in terms of hip hop, in terms of like a bigger hip hop artist. Like if we're talking about like underground artists that nobody knows, that sort of thing too. Like Lupe's got a lot to say.
He does, but again, isn't it's interesting that he's a guy that you look up to, right? He's got a lot to say. He does all these things. He spends most of 2012 telling you how terrible Atlantic is as a record company. Hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them.
Yeah.
And puts out the record despite of the industry, and then turns around in 2013 I must have bumped into Ed Sheeran at the recording studio and had him cut a hook for me and released a song that, because turns out me raging against the machine doesn't get me on top 40 radio, but yeah. Ed Sheeran does, so I'm going to put him on a song. And so how do you take that guy seriously?
I feel like
I'm a huge fan of Lupe Fiasco, but I don't want you or anybody listening to think that I think it's bad that you hook up with Ed Sheeran. That's not what I'm saying.
Right,
but you can't say that you're going to be the truth, right? I'm going to tell you how the industry is and how terrible my label is. Then I'm going to turn around and use my label to hook up with their most successful pop star so that you pay attention to me, because you didn't pay attention to me when I was telling terrible the label was.
He's just probably trapped in the whole business.
But
end
shouldn't
of
he
things.
Be a guy that's not trapped? I mean, I saw Talib Kweli open for Macklemore, and Talib's a guy who, you know, if you're into hip hop, you're into Talib Kweli, or at least you should.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a guy who, to me, seems like he's settled into where he is in the landscape.
Oh, for sure. You he's know, not
he's
gonna
totally
yeah.
fine with.
But
whatever.
See, that's the problem. Like he, so, but why does he? You know, like he has to settle for this, like that level of. Why can't he? Keep you know because, why can't he get bigger?
Because we play Gangnam Style. That's why, dude.
Right. And so maybe I'm.
I mean, no. I'm being. I mean,
no, I know. I agree. So I'm just using this to try to think about like Lupe's situation. You know, maybe he's like, yeah, that didn't work. So now, like, is this a means to like a different end? You know what I mean? Like, is this,
that could be if you don't spend an entire year saying the system's broken.
Right, but yeah, but you're in the contract and you're trapped in it, so you've got to do something to make
contract.
It. Yeah, well,
I mean, nobody, you know, you can, and you'll hear that, especially in the hip hop community. And what I'm about to say is a little bit controversial, but. It's based in fact. You'll hear a lot of the slavery talk. You know, I'm slave to the label, which I think is a bit disingenuous to the actual definition of slavery, especially you know, especially when nobody is literally forcing you to sign that.
No. You're not being forced. But it's that's got to be a hard situation to be in, man. I couldn't imagine. Because you finally have this opportunity to make substantial money and support lots of people, you know what I mean? Lots of people.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like I think that's a heavy pressure that,
but you don't this is why I asked you that, you know, 40 minutes ago, like, why would anyone want to do that? When you see somebody like this who, you know, Lupe Fiasco,
yeah,
genuine talent, a lot of stuff to say. You know, whatever your thoughts on him are kind of irrelevant to the argument here, but if he truly is trapped, why did you get trapped? You're a smart guy. Should be surrounded by other smart people.
Yeah, but you got the emotional side of things that probably like doesn't, you know, logic and emotions are not always gonna like coincide and
true
and go together. And then I think when you, I know for myself, when I think about Yeah, I know a lot of artists, when they think about like the opportunity to reach like this large amount of people that they would never be able to reach without the support of the label, and you start to you probably feel like optimistic, like, or you deceive yourself, or whatever the word is for it, you look past like all the problems and the legal issues and the way that the industry is set up to promote more of the stupid bullshit songs,
right?
You know what I'm saying? As opposed to like substantial things, but you think that you can be that person that can make those songs that are still going to say something for real, and you're going to use the industry to like to do that. You don't, maybe you don't realize how strong the pull is in the other direction.
Well, it's tremendously strong. All you have to do is look at what on any format. I mean, look at let's go back. We'll go back to 1989, right?
Okay.
There's a band out of Seattle that's about to destroy the music industry. Literally, it's going to end an entire genre of hair bands, and that band being Nirvana, right?
Yeah.
Nirvana comes along, blows open the doors, changes the way that you consume rock music.
Oh, yeah.
Know, followed by Pearl Jam, followed by Mudhoney, followed by all of those guys, right?
Okay.
Look at alternative and rock right now. They are vapid wastelands of terrible, terrible music. There is nothing going on. The most interesting thing that's going on in alternative and rock music is an actor who pretends to be a rock star in Jared Leto. He's the most interesting thing that's going on there. Because, you know, he takes a lot of chances because he doesn't really care because he doesn't really need the money. And I think that's the key. You know, to be in a position where it's like, I'm signed to a label, sure, but I don't really need to be because I get $20 million a picture and I just won an Oscar. So I don't really care if you put me on the road or don't put me on the road, because I could do this without you. The only thing I need you for is scale. Same with Macklemore. Macklemore comes out of Seattle. He's doing it all by himself. The only thing he needed Warner Brothers for, and which is why he didn't sign to Warner Brothers, he signed to a distribution deal, is scale. And I think scale is something we could talk about. But I don't know that you need the system. You may need the resources. You may need the scale because you can't reach the country by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even Pearl Jam, who's been off J Records before Epic Records. I mean, they've been off major labels for a long, long time.
Okay.
On this last last record, I should say, signed with a major just to distribute, just for scale, so that they don't have to hire record reps and they don't have to work their own music and they don't have to worry about how do they get a song from Seattle to New York and do all of that stuff. And that obviously is still a part of the industry that I think bands will need. But I don't know that you need... When you see what's going on and you see that you've got alternative rock and active rock and rock, Lord knows why there are three formats, because there isn't enough music to fill one of them, let alone three.
What is active rock?
Active rock is apparently angrier versions of terrible rock. Like, if you spend some time looking at those charts, there are some awful music out there because they've got, I mean, it's like CNN with the Malaysia flight. They've got 24 hours to fill, so they have to tell ridiculous stories about meteors and UFOs and whatever, because once they tell you the truth, they've got 23 hours and 59 minutes still to fill.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got 24 hours of music to fill, and there's only so much nickel puddle of mud back that you can play in a given day. You know, you've got to feed it with whatever it is out there right now.
Whoa, but who's buying these albums, though? See, that's the problem.
Rock albums? Nobody is buying these rock albums.
No, but who's buying, like, all this terrible music? Like, Nickelback, for instance. People are buying Nickelback. They sell millions of records.
They'd sell out the Van Allen Arena today.
I know they would.
Right? This very second,
friend. They would sell it out all the time. Yep. They could sell it out every single day.
They could turn Grand Rapids into a Vegas show and play every week, and they would sell it out.
Canadian bands do well here.
Yes, right. Yeah, if they had Rush as an opening act, right. Look out, dude. They could get $200 a ticket every week. Yeah.
No, but for real though, like, there's the industry problem, but then there's the listener problem. There's the consumers.
But like,
right?
I don't know. I mean, how do you win that battle? Like,
which one? How do you win either one?
No. I mean, let's use the listener battle as the sticking point, right?
Yeah.
Everybody at this table knows that an orange is better for you than fast food.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everybody here knows that.
Right.
Which do you think is going to win if you put them both on a table?
Yeah, I don't like oranges.
Right, exactly. Right. So, that's the battle.
Right.
Everybody knows that Rachmaninoff is a fantastic classical musician who made heart-wrenching music that if you So if you spend 5 minutes listening to it, you can't help but be moved.
Okay.
But if I give you the choice of listening to a classical music radio station or stabbing yourself in the face, you're probably going to stab yourself in the face. Because you'd much rather listen.
So there's too much music?
No, I just think people want consumables. When you look at what has happened since 2006 to right now, when MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and all those things showed up, and our attention span became 90 seconds or less.
2006, that's a good marking point.
You know, when you look at that, people want to listen to things that are, you know, quick.
But don't you think, doesn't it seem like it should have to sound good?
You would think. I mean,
there's people, it's shit that doesn't even sound good. Like, I can definitely understand, in terms of, like, lyrical content, like, I want to listen to something that's just, like, more fun as opposed to something that's, like, preaching at me and telling me, like, what the social injustices of today are and how we can remedy these and that sort of thing. Like,
because you got to be in a mood for that.
You do. And you can't listen to it over and over for song after song after song in function. Like, you can't do that. I understand that, but I'm just saying, like, I just want the music that people are saying is good to sound good too.
Give me an example of something that you don't think sounds good.
Do you like Juicy J's verse on that song? That verse is horrible.
No. So
that's something that does not sound good, right?
Yes, but again, that's part of the machine. So you have somebody in Katy Perry who reaches audience A, right?
Yeah.
And you want to reach audience B, and without getting into too many semantics, we all know what that audience is, right?
Yeah.
And so you add some texture to it and move a song. You know, Katy Perry is always going to live in the top 40 universe, and Juicy J has some cachet at hip hop stations and rhythm CHR stations and urban stations, right?
Right.
Katy Perry maybe not so much. So you combine those two, and you go wherever. But for Juicy J's perspective, I don't fault him for that, because somebody gives him a check for $500,000, sends him the track via GarageBand or Pro Tools or whatever, and goes, dude, say some stuff. I don't really actually even care if it's in key or rhymes, but you have 16 you have 16 bars, and that's your window, you know. And that formula you see everywhere you see the pop artists you'll see whatever pop artist that has a song and it doesn't really take off.
Yeah.
And so then they'll remix the song and all of a sudden...
Everybody else is on it?
Pharrell will be on it. Or, you know...
Nicki Minaj is on
Nicki Minaj
it.
Nicki Minaj for the one hour that she was super... I mean, there's a perfect example. That woman was a gajillionaire, and where is she?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Where is she?
Where is she?
I don't know. And when you look at all the DJs in the EDM scene, why are there no women?
Well, I don't know. Do we not like women DJs?
Apparently. I mean, because when you look at the list and you look at Skrillex and Deadmau5 and Tiësto and Avicii, and you know, they have
you can't sell women are for sex. Right, that's their purpose in
is that really
music.
That's their purpose.
Yeah. The women are here to be packaged with sexuality, right?
I'm not gonna fight you on that.
I'm just saying though, I think that's the thinking though. Like, you can't. How can you?
So you couldn't have a. There could
you can't,
be a smart woman DJing
do,
like with the guy singing.
Nobody.
Your heart,
no.
Right?
The public doesn't. They're not gonna be attracted to that.
I know you're not saying
that's
that,
not my opinion.
But that goes
that's
back.
Not, that's not what I think.
That 1,000% goes back to my point about Miley Cyrus being in on the joke. I think she knows exactly what she's doing and knows that she couldn't be up on stage with a chalkboard walking you through what a Fibonacci sequence is.
Yeah.
Because nobody would buy it.
And
she can attempt to, use a giant penis to do right. something to Robin Thicke at the Grammys and the VMAs, and all of a sudden
everyone wants to talk about her
and buy her single.
That's been happening over and over and over again for years and years. I mean, you know, she's not doing anything different than Gaga did before her, and you look at Madonna in the 80s. I mean, you know, what if you had Madonna, the Madonna in the 80s was now? What if you had the same extremely smart person who would use
those two examples. So Madonna in the 80s, right? She was doing the same thing with the Like a Virgin tour and Justify My Love and all those titillating videos that she did, and she had her moment, and then she tried to come back, but she hadn't evolved, and there's nothing sexy about a 55-year-old, right? So it doesn't work, to your point, you know?
And
Gaga goes away for a while, does this giant tour, gets a gajillion dollars, she's one of the best performances I've ever seen from a show perspective.
Mm-hmm.
She was out of everything that you wanted out of a performance that you could want. Runs herself ragged, obviously hurts her hip, has to get surgery, and comes back and goes, man, I want to do something different. I want to have people vomit on me, and I want to break that mold that you're talking about, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, like she wants to be, she'll tell in interviews that she tries to be as ugly as possible to break that stereotype. You'll see her every once in a while and you'll see the glimmers of what could be. And she just shuns that because she wants you to pay attention to the music. Except when she pushes it too far, like the South by Southwest performance where she has somebody walk on stage and vomit on her, nobody cares.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the only people care are Demi Lovato, who wants to, you know, yell about bulimia, and, you know, a couple other news outlets. But for the customer and the consumable product, it's not like they went out and bought a whole bunch of that single.
Mm-hmm.
Would they have a few years ago? Like, is that more about the evolution of our consciousness?
She
leaves a scene for a minute, a hot second, mm-hmm. and then all you see are, you know, naked pictures of Miley Cyrus grinding up on somebody, or, you know, and that's the next big thing now. So now the Gaga thing is done, and now we're on to, you know, this Miley trip, which will get old eventually. I mean, it's gonna happen.
Sure.
And then there'll be someone else.
But I the fascinating thing about Miley is I wonder if she'll be able to get through more than one rotation of the sun, so to speak. Like, you know, will she goes away for a while and comes out with another album? Has she, you know, has she figured out the code to come back again and get you to pay attention? Because Gaga really didn't.
Who has been able to
recently?
Then you have somebody like Beyonce. That I think, does she not get people's attention every single time?
She gets people's attention.
I don't
have the stuff in front of me, but like, yeah, so you show up on a Wednesday night and go, surprise, there's an album, and sell a gajillion copies. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think if you were to look at that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you were to look at how that worked week in and week out, I don't know that it stuck the way that they probably would have wanted it to, because obviously, as you know, being in the industry, the idea is release date, you get X amount, and then much like a movie, you've got a finite time to get people's attention. So you want people to go, dude, have you bought the Beyonce record? It's insane. And so to answer your question, my go-to is always Kanye. Always.
Okay.
Because I think he's a guy that you can say what you want. He's a dude who always makes noise, and he's a dude who is none of those albums sound alike at all. And that's
true.
That's certainly difficult for somebody who liked College Dropout to like, you know, to like the newer stuff.
Yeah. I like College Dropout.
Yeah, right.
I like Late Registration,
but yeah, I like the college theme stuff, but you know, he obviously lost a lot of fans with 808 and Heartbreaks when he did all that auto-tune stuff. And then as you go on through his career, but as an artist, as somebody who I think continually just goes, you know what, I'm going to do this, and you're either going to buy it or not buy it. It makes him dangerous as an artist, much like Jared Leto. You know, Jared doesn't need the money, so he can go into the studio, and his last album was like a rock opera, so he can go and go do that stuff because he doesn't really care if there's a single.
I don't really care
because I've got this core group of people. I can sell out theaters. I don't need to sell out arenas because I won an Oscar, you know. So I don't need to fall into the trappings like you were talking about earlier with, and we don't know this about Lupe, but if Lupe feels trapped, a guy like Jared Leto or a guy like Kanye has so many other irons in the fire that they don't need to worry about it.
Right.
they can take their time in the project and they can meet with Rick Rubin and
these are people that have money. I mean, Kanye's got money, Jared's got money. You know what I'm saying?
But they started somewhere. They didn't.
No, but they weren't doing. Kanye wasn't. That's why he made College Dropout, though, and that's why he made late registration.
But isn't this what
he had to kind of play by some rules at the beginning?
Isn't this what we're talking about, though? So why can't all these other artists
play by the rules at the beginning and then?
No, even that they like. Why couldn't? Why can't Miley Cyrus? Does Miley Cyrus not have an audience that would listen to whatever this next album is if she decided to? Triumph some cause or do something more interesting, like you don't. That's the question you're asking. It's like with Gaga, she tried to do something more interesting. It went over the head of everybody, and nobody bought into it. And that's because you had the College Dropout crowd. Let's say when she had her fame and Monster and all of that stuff, and then they weren't ready for this other thing. They weren't ready for art pop. Because you maybe you hadn't given it enough time, and because Kanye obviously had 3 or 4 records before we got to 808 and Heartbreak, so you had brought people along and shifted just slight enough. Hey, this one's gonna be a little bit okay. This one's gonna be a little bit more different.
Right.
Now I'm gonna bash you over the head with the new thing that I'm doing. And Gaga, as an example, here's somebody who tried to do it too quickly, and they all left, but. To go back to talking about Britney Spears, she's never even tried it, really.
No, she hasn't.
Every album is the same kind of vibe.
It's written for her, and she's a performer. I mean, I think there's a big difference between.
But you I always think that somebody who's been as successful as she's been for as long as she's been would have to want to be an artist at some point. At some point, you would want to.
I
want to
be an artist.
Create
I'm
something.
Not capable of doing it.
No. It's no easy feat, sure. As Adrian will say, to go from being a kid to being a kid on the Mickey Mouse Club to being a kid that graduates from the Mickey Mouse Club to start to do some tour dates. Then people start to pay attention to you. Then you get signed. Then you start playing clubs. Then you start playing arenas. And then. They drop a nuclear bomb on your life and you become a superstar overnight. And for the most part, she's pretty much kept it somewhat sane, given what happened to her life. And so what I say is, yeah, you want to be an artist and you want to do that, but you haven't gone through the system, so to speak. And I just, she's a fascinating one because she went from pop star to doing a stint in Vegas. That really
yeah, what happened with that?
It didn't really sell, because you see these people trying to skip the steps. Like, she hasn't got to the point where she's doing greatest hits albums and reunion tours that people want to go see a nightly Vegas show.
Right, but it's a formula that I think has existed for a long time. You look at solo artists like Elvis, and, you see the progression of his career where, he started... basically, all the hits that he had were other people's songs that he just did in his own way. I mean, that's what it was. It was gospel music was that he took. And that progressed. And then, he was a star and he was doing these shows a la Britney Spears. And the fame got to him a la Britney Spears. And I think then you saw the progression. They were like, okay, well, let's make you sort of a stationary artist and people will pay, hundreds and hundreds of dollars to come see you in Vegas, and this works for everybody, and we're going to do it for all these artists, Celine Dion, Britney Spears, but it doesn't work with everybody because these aren't the same talented people. And I feel like, Britney Spears, you say Mickey Mouse Club, child star, prodigy. I mean, you got to remember that.
I did not say prodigy.
her mom was taking her to these auditions when she was a child, and she was singing in front of people at talent shows and beauty pageants and things. That I mean, she was molded into this person that no one knew quite how it was going to turn out, but they didn't really care as long as it made money and was famous. Where you look at Lupe, who was just an artist, and people loved him because he was I'm not trying to make it simplistic, but he was just an artist, and then he got big. And then it's like, okay, well, you want to work with, you mentioned, working with other artists, right, and different people. And it's like, okay, well, now you're a sellout. Is he really a sellout, or is he doing what he wants to do?
And that's not what I was saying. What I was saying is, like, if you
this industry is so unforgiving, and I think you hit the nail on the head that most of the people that are in that lane of top 40 are famous. They're not artists. They're famous.
Yeah.
But what I was saying is that Lupe Fiasco, when you spend an entire year saying the system is broken, and then, you know, and you get all those people to buy into that. The system is broken thing, and then you turn around and jump into the system and do a song with Ed Sheeran, which was, I thought, a great song, but kind of disingenuous to what you were just saying. And for somebody who,
right,
you know, wanted to, that's what you want your to be known as, it's hard to stay in that universe when
it's got to be a rough game. I mean, you know, I'm sure he was at the pinnacle of some point in his life, and you did say all that stuff, but it was like, you know, you insult the wrong people at that level, and you can go back to doing what you were doing before, but do you want to give that up? Do you want to give up the things that you have now as an artist who's gone this far, who's made it, made these connections? You want to take that step back? And to me, that's the real question. I don't know that he looked at it like, would my music suffer? Would I be giving up who I really truly am as an artist?
No, he probably looked at it as, if I do this track with Ed Sheeran, more people will buy my stuff. Buy my
yeah, I think so.
I can tell that story.
But
I don't know with him, and I don't know him at all. But, you know, I don't know with him that it's necessarily that money play as much as it is, can I get them to listen to my stuff, you know?
I don't. He's at a weird spot to me. I don't know. Yeah. I just know that I would, having that much money, when you have that much money, you've got lots of he's got to have lots of people relying on him for financial assistance and that sort of thing.
Sure, I mean,
you know what I'm saying. So I feel like that's got to be a heavy
MC Hammer problem.
Yeah. And I have to say, man, like, I don't know how much time we have left, and I don't want to get into like too many racial issues and shit, but like that seems to be a heavy thing with a lot of like black artists and black superstars that, you know, like in the black community in general, like this feeling of like if you're not reaching back to help
your family or your
community, then now you're not being true to
and me
to who
you know,
are. You
and,
know what I'm saying?
And me saying this, I understand the hypocrisy I should say of me saying this, but like, how can you not? I mean, the whole industry is run by white America, and when you're the guy or the girl or the group,
yeah,
bust through. I mean, I couldn't even imagine that pressure.
Yeah,
you know, if you knew people from the old neighborhood, and you're, you know,
yeah,
you're the Roots, or you're N.W.A., or you're Dr. Dre, or you're Jay-Z, or you're Nelly, or you're MC Hammer, or you're whoever. I couldn't even imagine when you go back to visit and see. I mean, everyone in this room has traveled America and has seen slums.
For sure,
you know,
for sure.
I mean, all of Detroit is essentially a slum.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're an artist from Detroit, I can't even imagine. Even, you know, like, to take race out of it. If you're Eminem, I can't even imagine going back there to the
right
to what you would feel be and the responsibility to be like, well, why did
why
I
aren't
get
you
out,
doing? Yeah.
Why did I get out of this? This is how did I get out of this? This is insane.
Yeah.
It's an obligation. Seems like, I mean, it like your family's still there, you know, your friends.
Yeah, friends are still there.
And so you hear from your brothers or your sisters or your mom, your dad, your aunts and uncles, whatever, about, you know, what the neighbors are saying and what your friends that you grew up with are saying about you. And, you know, I think there's an element to protect.
And, you know, people are you're still a person. You know what I'm saying? You got all this money. You have fame. You're still a person. You still have feelings. You still care about the people that you cared about. You know what I'm saying? Before
just to
all
some
this stuff
extent,
happened.
You know
what I'm saying?
The difference becomes, I think, no matter what, where you are in your level of fame, and no matter what your race is, like, figure out the people that really are there for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because the fascinating thing about MC Hammer is, you know, when that train crashed, there was nobody around him. You know, they wanted the gold-plated crocodiles and whatever other crazy stuff that they were buying, you know. But once he had no
gold-plated crocodiles,
have you seen his crazy VH1 documentary?
I've seen part of it, but
buying some insane stuff.
Gold-plated crocodiles,
maybe not gold-plated crocodiles, but I mean, like, when you have that sort of money, it's hard to keep it all in check. I mean, even Michael Jackson. spent money like it was water on insane, useless things.
Yeah, in an amusement park.
He bought an amusement park.
At a house that he probably never was there.
Filled it with talking llamas or whatever he did. You know, the money does really weird stuff to you. And
that is that's got to be weird, though, to just wake up in the morning and just, like, think about something crazy and ridiculous that you know, like, oh, shit, you know, like, I want a DeLorean and I want the Magnum PI Ferrari. And actually, I want every dope sports car from any 80s TV show,
right,
like, by the end of the month. And I think I can do it because I have enough money to do it. Like, that would be crazy. You know what I mean? Like, how would that change your mind? Like,
to take this out of the music industry for a second, that's what reality TV is. I mean, look at, the entire Duck Dynasty show, that's what it is. They wake up every morning and whatever dumb thing comes in their mind, Discovery gives them the money to go do it, and that's their life.
I think that would have to mess with your, like, perception of reality eventually.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? After
you wouldn't have one. If you woke up tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And money was not a care, and I mean literally not a care. You didn't have to do anything for the rest of time because you were making $1 billion a second, right?
Right.
So let's scale it to a point that it's just unfathomable. You're making $1 billion a second by merely existing. You know, I don't even know how you would keep that in perspective. I mean, I read somewhere that the guys from Duck Dynasty, the first year that show was a hit, their sales of duck calls were up 2,500%. Now, that seems like an incredible stat. And then when you add into the fact that means there's probably close to 1 million people in the United States that bought a duck call that don't even know where to use it. This is the music industry and reality. This is what we consume. We consume disposable products. We consume, to go back to Miley Cyrus being in on the joke, we consume what Miley Cyrus tells us to do. We consume Duck Dynasty. We consume Real Housewives of Atlanta or Basketball Wives or Bachelor or The Bachelorette or The Voice or The American Idol Voice or The X Factor American Idol Voice or The Voice X Factor American Idol Survivor Superstars show, you know, that's what, and I mean, don't even get me started on the reality show,
which
musician
shows. That what the Nashville show?
Nashville's
is
terrible.
Is that?
But I mean, like X Factor and The Voice and American Idol, just what they've done to the industry is almost as insane. And like, I don't want to spend a whole much more of your evening talking, but what they've done to the industry is almost as insane as what the CDR did. You know, the CDR, I tell this to everybody, CDR ruined it for radio stations and program directors across the country because it made everybody think that they were a star.
Yeah.
You know, it's on CD, man. I'm a star, you know, I got a CD, you know, and because that used to be the barrier to entry.
Let me just pause real quick. We got Mint Girl Scout cookies on the table right now.
Enjoy.
I'm just going to have one.
You should.
I hope you can hear that.
Yeah, you can. I hope you can.
Well, I would say the same thing about MySpace and YouTube and home recording equipment. You know what I'm saying? There's no, that's another big, we didn't even get to talk about this. You don't have to prove yourself anymore. There's no proving ground. There's no.
You market yourself.
Yeah, if you tell people you're dope for long enough, eventually they will believe you. If you keep telling them you're dope,
look at
and you don't have to. I mean, back in my day, you know, if you were gonna rap, you needed to like be in a cipher with 10 to 20 other rappers and prove yourself in that
sure,
place.
Dude. I mean, you know, when I was playing in a band, you had to every weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, playing some horrific bar. And back when I was doing it was, you know, when guys like the Verve Pipe were getting signed. And you're like, dude, this is my shot out of here. All I got to do is keep grinding it out. And somebody from RCA will walk by and
right,
be like,
right,
hey, you guys are not the Verve Pipe. So what's up, you know? And And but you, yeah, you know, you talk to Brian Vander Ark, he'll tell you what a terrible experience that whole thing was, being signed to a major. But yeah, when we were doing music, and obviously you're still doing music, I decided to just play Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus for a living, because it paid the mortgage. But you know, back then you had to get. You had to be in a cipher. I had to mire in.
You had to do those shows.
Fit 22 people and play house parties to three people whose back were turned to you because that was where the keg was, and that was what it was. And now all you.
No, but you had to be in front of other musicians though. You know, you had to be in front of other musicians, and
you had to
show that you were good, that you could do this thing, and you don't have to do that anymore. No. You can sit in your room and.
There are people on YouTube. I mean, above and beyond music, there are people on YouTube that are 20 years younger than us that make literally millions of dollars a year posting videos of them playing Call of Duty. That's a thing.
This is depressing.
I mean, millions of dollars a year, and all they do is record themselves playing 8 hours a day of Call of Duty. And so, yeah, that's depressing on the one hand, but when that person becomes 40... What does that person do? When Miley Cyrus becomes 50, what does she do? When Lorde becomes 27, you know, like what is she going to do? When Katy Perry hits 40, what is she going to do? I honestly don't know that this moment in history, much like your disco analogy, which is spot on, this is going to be a blip on the radar. Nobody will talk about this. From 2006 to 2014, I don't know what's going to happen in 15, so I don't want to speak on that. But that 7-year period, or maybe even the decade from 2000 or two decades, 2000 to 2020, just won't exist.
It makes me wonder, like when we're like those old people at weddings.
We're already, you know what I'm saying? Old people at weddings.
No, like those really old people. You know, like when you're like, oh yeah, like we want to get the 55 and up year olds to dance. Like, what are they going to play? Like, what are they going to look back and, you know, like, because they're going to be like, oh,
we're going to play Flo Rida Low.
Exactly what I'm saying. Are they going to play, like, they're going to look back on the charts and see what was like number one back in this time and play that?
It'll be the Cupid Shuffle.
Yeah. And we're not going to like that though. We don't even like it now.
No. Right. That's mostly because there were 700 different versions of it.
Yeah, this is
depressing.
Dark times.
I don't know that it's depressing because music is cyclical. I mean, you know, we can go back.
But there's still a lot of good music that's being made. Just, you know what I'm saying? But it's just not.
It's hard to find it though.
It is hard to find, and it takes time. You know, we got wade through all this other stuff to get to it.
Because you don't necessarily have a radio outlet. You know, even if you go. To a digital platform, you go to iHeartRadio, you go to Spotify, you go to Beats, you go to whatever you go to. None of those things, in my opinion, work as well as the way terrestrial radio used to. That's okay, it's only a show. you know, none of those things work as well as the way radio used to work. It used to be, I mean, I remember there used to be that the song that I was in love with, and I would record it on a cassette tape.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Double cassette tape, and you would
high speed, you would
put it on a cassette tape 400 times so you could listen to that thing over and over and over again. If you were really good, you would cut out the DJ, so it would just be the song.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But now, it's just that echo chamber. It's what is. You know, what you see trending on YouTube, which then gets played on the radio station, which then gets licensed to a TV commercial, which then gets played at a sports arena, which then gets played in a club, which then shows up in a wedding, which, you know, ends up being our soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't... The scary thing for me is you say it's cyclical, that this stuff does work around and around and around, but... I don't see a positive, really.
Let's put it into some perspective. I mean, Was Not Was did a song about walking dinosaurs. I mean, the song was god awful, but that was in a cycle of the 80s where it was awful music. Tiffany, I Think We're Alone. I mean, there's a million songs from the 80s that were terrible, and then.
But then there were some really good 80s songs too.
But you got to dig for them. They were not popular.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, they were popular in circles, but we look back now with a different lens. And you and I look back and go, oh, well, I mean, NWA was back then, and Public Enemy was back then, and you know, the Fushnikins were back then, and Fushnikins, they were kind of in the 90s, but you know what I mean?
Like, I know.
You look back now that you have some perspective, and you see a different decade than the one you actually lived in.
Mm.
You know, you actually lived in the decade where Nelson and Extreme and all that stuff was getting played on the radio, where, you know, but we look back at it, and so
that's true.
That might be the, to me, that might be the silver lining, is that growing up right now, you're listening to all this god awful music, and then you're going to get 20 years ahead, and you're going to look back, and you're going to talk about different music
than what,
tell anybody that you listen to that stuff.
Got you.
Like, you won't tell
you.
Anybody that you, you know, owned Tiffany on cassette. You that won't be a thing that you say to anybody.
That's a good point. That is a good point, because when I look back on music, I do not. Yeah. That's true.
Like, you know, in circles, you'll tell people that you owned Purple Rain, right? But you won't admit to if you had Cameo.
That
song was like the hottest song on planet Earth at one point. Was Not was the hottest song on planet Earth at one point. Just like your disco example, the Weather Girls were, you know, It's Raining Men was a ginormous song, and many people owned it. But now it's a joke.
Right.
YMCA is now a joke, but people owned it back then.
Mm-hmm.
But we look back in a different. You know, we look back at the 70s and we pick Rush and we pick whatever classic rock band, because that's where most people want to live and talk.
Oh, yeah.
And forget that disco was even a thing.
That's true.
And it feels like that when I talk about cyclicality, I think that's what it is. Yeah. That we'll look back at this and we won't tell anyone that we ever heard, you know, what LMFAO is. Nobody ever heard the selfie song. That was not a thing.
Yeah, I hope so, man. I mean, you know, the end of the 80s was people learning that they didn't have to use synthesizers in every song. You know what I mean? And it's sort of like you learn what your technology is, and you learn what you can use and, you know, make yourself sound better. And I kind of think, I kind of hope that, you know, in an age where everything's digitized and, you know, the recording's different now and everything's processed, that they use it better in the future.
Well, the thing that it does, and that's why I wanted to have Adrian here, and we'll wrap this up here in a second, but the thing that it does is it takes down the barriers. You know, you can print your own music, you can start your own store, you can sell your own t-shirts, you don't need the system. And that's obviously a huge benefit. A huge benefit.
That is true.
What we do with it is obviously the debate, but the technology is merely a tool, and as a tool, I think it's brilliant for musicians. Brilliant. Mm. Because you don't need permission anymore. You don't need a radio station, and you don't need a major label, and you don't need any of that stuff. I mean, you can make fun of Justin Bieber all you want, but this is a kid who he and his single mom were starving to death in Canada, and he started making random videos on YouTube. You know, that kid didn't ask for permission.
Right,
go to tryouts like Britney Spears did. Yeah, I get it. He's a giant douchebag right now. I totally get that. But the beginning of the story is a story about how technology can get you out of a situation if you use it properly.
That's how can we end it better than that?
That's a good moral.
Well, Adrian Butler, thank you for joining us.
Man, thank you for having me. This was fun. This was fun. I would love to do this again. All right. Yeah.
All right, if people want to get a hold of you, obviously we talked early on in the podcast before everyone to hear that Twitter is not the way because you never answer. But
oh, man.
Facebook, Facebook is how to get a hold of you?
Yeah, Facebook is cool. Adrian Butler Facebook or A period B period because it's AB. So when you start seeing AB stuff everywhere, that's myself. Yes.
Have a good weekend, my friend.
All right. You too.